We hope that we'll be able to share with you today these various projects and programs that are helping our communities to plan and communicate better around their coastal issues. So today, starting out, will be Beth Bisson. She's here with us from Maine Sea Grant, and she is the educational coordinator with the following Beth, Shay Conover from the Island Institute. And Shay is the senior program director there and will be presenting. Jennifer Atkinson is joining us from the Quebec Labrador Foundation. And she is directed QLF's marine program. And she's been doing this since 2002. And then finally, Chris Fort will be wrapping it up for us. And she's here with us from the Wells National Estuarine Research Reserve. And there she is the Coastal Training Program Coordinator. So let's welcome our panel. We will go through the presentation. And we'll have a question and answer session for the last half an hour of our session today.
Can you all hear me?
Here we go.
Yep. I don't have a very loud voice, so I'm going to use the microphone. But I am going to be telling you about a project called Seascapes. It's called Getting to Know the Sea Around Us, A Guide to Characterizing Marine Areas. And I did bring a couple copies with me, and I'll pass these around as I talk so you can take a look at them. And I do have a couple of extra copies, so if you are working with a group, a watershed group or a land trust or another organization, and you think you might be interested in using this guide, let me know and I can give you a copy, and otherwise just pass it along for other people to look at. Okay. So this project, I have to start with the caveat that this is primarily originated by the Quebec Labrador Foundation, by one of our other panelists, Jen Atkinson, but it was also a collaborative project with Maine Sea Grant from the beginning, and that's why I'm here today to talk about it. Quebec QLF had support from Maine Sea Grant, Gulf of Maine Council on the Marine Environment, NOAA, the Davis Conservation Foundation, Maine Coastal Program, Cerdna Foundation, and Wallace Foundation to develop the guide. And it was written by Peter Taylor of Waterview Consulting. It's the first comprehensive guide of its kind for how-to guide for conducting a marine area characterization. And I'll define in a moment exactly what we mean by that. And it was published in 2008, but the project actually started over the 2003-2004 years, during which Jen and Tracy Hartz, somebody who some of you might know, used to work at Sea Grant, who pulled together a 20-member working group, and they had a year-long series of workshops in which they developed the recommendations out of their collective expertise for what a marine area characterization is and how to conduct it and all the resources that one needs in order to do that. Next slide. What's in the guide? It has four sections. The first section is an overview. It goes over what is a marine area characterization, who does it, and how it works. The section two is what is the process for conducting a marine area characterization. Section three is what kinds of data do we want to gather, what can be characterized. And the last section, which says appendix, but it's really almost half of the document, is a wonderful list of resources and links for the information sources that are out there. And it's written specifically for organizations and groups working in Maine, so the resources are tailored. Some of them have a broader applicability, but they're all relevant for Maine communities, coastal communities. Next slide. So a marine area characterization, as this group defined it, is to find, compile, synthesize, and present information about a particular marine area to tell the natural and human story of a place in the past or the present. And the data sources that you might want to gather include data from biology, ecology, geology, oceanography, chemistry, economics, and human ecology, to name a few of many that are out there. Next slide. Why conduct a marine area characterization? A lot of times the information that exists is fragmented, and this is a way to unite that information and provide a more holistic understanding of an area. It can be a small embayment or a large area such as Cobbs Hook Bay or Casco Bay. And it can also be inland watershed areas or waterways. It can be used to address information needs related to industrial or commercial use, scientific research, environmental issues, cultural or historical documentation, or proposed development or changes in the use of an area. And I know that a lot of coastal areas are affected by that kind of question right now. Next slide. Who conducts a marine area characterization? The answer is anyone can initiate the process, but we need a lot of different types of skills to feed into it in order to make sure that it's as comprehensive as possible. So similar things have been started by citizen groups, government agencies, non-government organizations, or even students could certainly initiate a project such as this. And a characterization ultimately will require skills of fishermen, scientists, mapping experts, historians, writers, community volunteers, data managers. It really varies depending on the particular information that you're trying to collate and present to your stakeholders. Next slide. The guide outlines a 12-step process, and I know that's a very negative connotation, but it really is a helpful, positive 12-step process. It has four major phases: planning, developing tools and acquiring resources, conducting the characterization itself, if you need to do original research in addition to gathering existing data, and producing and sharing findings, which is perhaps the most important step along the way to make sure that your community is getting the information you're gathering. So I'll just go through those quickly. The planning steps, there are four planning steps. Identify needs, involve key people, clarify your project focus, which can be a major thing. Sometimes the process of prioritizing what data is out there and what makes most sense to gather can be challenging. And then creating strategies for sharing findings is something that's really important to start earlier in your process so that you can be in touch with the right people and build your whole characterization around that final step. Next slide. Developing tools and acquiring resources. So number five is to decide what information you need, set up a data management system to organize it once you bring it in. And in many cases, external funds will be necessary to do this kind of thing. If you don't have a dedicated staff person, you might need someone to help coordinate the process or to pay for samples to be analyzed if you're doing some kind of biological research or something like that. So it's an important part. Next step, conducting the characterization itself, compiling existing information, conducting new research if necessary, and in that there, it'd be important to identify gaps, choose which ones to fill, gather resources, and conduct the research or monitoring itself, either within your own group through volunteer support or through scientists that you've contracted with, or any number of possibilities. Next. Producing and sharing findings. The last three are analyze data and produce findings, review findings, and share findings. And I have a picture here. You might recognize somebody in the picture. That's a picture of the Taunton Bay group who didn't use the seascapes, but they've done in Taunton Bay, they've done a lot of characterization work. And so this is a picture of one of their meetings that I attended. So the data that can actually be characterized really runs the gamut, and the Seascapes Guide includes a whole section, section 3, on where to find the different types of biological, physiological layers, and they include links for websites, documents, GIS layers, and other references for oceanographic, physiographic, and biological data, and also all human dimensions, cultural ecology, historical records, land use over time, and things like that. The guide is the reason why we haven't printed a large number of copies of the guide is because it's really the most useful in a digital format because all the links are live in the digital version and it saves a lot of time to use it that way. However, we in order to flip through it and see what's there, we have printed some. So let me know if you would like to have a copy, or if you know of a group that's interested in this kind of work who would like a copy. And so right now we're at a point where the guide is finished. We've gone through a long process to get it to this point, and we want to make sure that it's used and supported in the way that is most efficient and effective. So Sea Grant, and the reason why I'm involved now at this point after it's produced, is trying to figure out what the capacity is for doing marine area characterizations and what needs groups have in order to get going, and also what kind of support they might need along the way, and figuring out what resources are out there. And so a recent UMaine graduate from the dual degree program in marine policy and marine science, the School of Marine Sciences, is here today. Actually, her name is Danielle Brzezinski, and she's been working with our staff for a couple months now, interviewing a collection of pretty wide range of groups on just these questions. Next slide. Oh, you're there. Sorry, back. Can you go back one? Thank you. So she targeted groups that were from a range of sizes and demographics and places along the coast, and this map here shows this smattering of where everybody is. But the idea was to look at watershed groups and larger regional organizations and land trusts and anybody who might have an interest in this, and figure out what the pressing issues are and the reasons for doing characterization, capacity needs for characterization projects, staff, funding, technical assistance, etc., potential barriers to doing this kind of work, and also potential projects that people kind of have in their queue of things they'd like to do if they have the support they need to go forward. Next slide. And the next four slides are just a summary of those four things that Danielle has found so far in her work. And they are, some of the pressing issues are major changes in coastal land uses are happening right now through all the alternative energy resources that we heard a lot about this morning, climate change, sea level rise issues in general, new siting of aquaculture facilities, and other kinds of coastal growth and development. Many groups cite a need to just simply know more about a local area. A lot of terrestrial characterization projects are many years ahead of marine area characterization projects, and there's a lot of infrastructure in place for doing those kinds of things, and we're just now kind of getting to the point where we can start to do the same comprehensive characterization and planning for marine embayments and other coastal areas. So all that's to say that there's not a lot known about a lot of our coast right now. So just needing to know more is a pressing issue. So we have a need to, in some places, continue previous characterization work or develop or update area management plans, continue or expand involvement of local groups, towns, schools, and local stakeholders, and build upon previous successes. There are some groups that have really gone out in front with this, and they've already done quite a lot of characterization work. So we have a lot that we can learn from them. Next. Some of the capacity and needs for characterization work are CAIC coordinators, someone who's specifically devoted to the characterization projects, who's able to coordinate partners and kind of keep the ball rolling. That's probably the number one thing that we heard over and over again through Danielle's interviews. Other needs are consultants, are professional assistants of various kinds, including data management and analysis, field research or monitoring assistance, and analyzing samples. Coordination with other groups is important to avoid duplication, utilize strengths, and prioritize projects regionally. Implementation, and another, this is a need, and it's also potentially a barrier cited in both places, was the need to be sure that if we're going to do all these characterizations, there's a way to implement the findings and change management at the end of it. And so that's another step down the road, but that's something that was cited originally. So groups are not just going out and collecting all kinds of data with no hope of ever really having an impact on management. So that's something that came up many times. And then funding, of course, especially in these economic times, for salary, equipment, and supplies was something that came up a lot. Potential barriers, some of these are repeats, funding, internal expertise, depending on the makeup of the groups, they range from all volunteer groups to groups with large paid staff, so it really depends in the area. And so some focus on very large regional areas, so it's tough to have all of the skills within your own organization that you would need to do something like this. Local incentives sometimes are not as clear as they could be, needing clear cause and effect relationships between what could be a problem and what data, existing data show. Implementation post-assessment is what I was just mentioning, funds to implement management or other changes after the characterization work is done. And having a dedicated individual to keep the ball rolling and coordinate. In some cases, in many cases, groups do not have that. Common potential projects that people listed are expanding coastal monitoring into a larger bay, climate change information and prediction specific to municipalities, because we have a lot of information or an ever-increasing amount of information for state and regional levels, but having that very fine-scale information is we're very early in that process. Building GIS capacity, post-acquisition full assessment of lands, that's from a land trust perspective. Once you acquire a piece of land, you're really starting from square one and finding out what's there and where the sensitive areas are. Continued pollution assessment and remediation is something that a lot of groups are working with. And periodic snapshot assessments are another way to really maximize your effort for any one given time and get a full sense of what's there. If you don't have the resources to do continual monitoring over time, a snapshot assessment is a great way to do something like a State of the Bay report or a pollution analysis in many different places over a couple months in the summer or something like that. Next slide. Oh, so next steps. After Danielle is just wrapping up her work now, and we'll be reviewing findings from this needs and capacity assessment. And Sea Grant is committed to engaging partners, organizations to investigate possible collaborative approaches for supporting marine area characterization work in Maine. So if you're interested in becoming part of a collaborative that's interested in that, I'd love to talk to you. And finally, just making sure that everyone who's interested in marine characterization has a copy of this guide and or similar resources and information that they need to help get things going. And next slide. Seascapes is available as a downloadable PDF from the Quebec Labrador Foundation website, from Maine Sea Grant website, and from the Gulf of Maine Council on the Marine Environment website. And the Gulf of Maine Council site actually has a really nice description, point by point, of what is included in the guide, too, if that's helpful, if you're working with a group that might want to point them to that part. And printed copies can be ordered from an organization called Lulu. They I believe cost something around $20 each, but we have printed several and I'm getting the stock, and so luckily that's my last slide. Thank you very much.